This hour, we will discuss the top stories of the year and preview the stories likely to make headlines in 2014. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, December 31st. Happy New Year's Eve morning. The last day of the year is a good day to reflect on the year that was and anticipate the year that will be. And we would like to know from you, what do you think was the top political news story of the year and why? What was the biggest political success or political failure of the year? What do you hope will happen in Washington, D.C. in 2014? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Happy to have with us Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette University Law School Poll and a professor of law and public policy. He is the co-founder of Pollster.com and the founder of PollsandVotes.com. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Happy New Year almost to you, and I'm sorry that you got it off on the wrong foot, apparently.
Literally, I missed a step yesterday. I'm a little sprained, but otherwise fine. But,
well, good.
Give me an excuse not to come out on this cold morning.
Well, that's true. Yeah, normally Professor Franklin is in the studio with us, but had to give us a call to say he best not hobble in this morning, but glad to have you on the phone anyway. So we have different lists here from different national publications as to what were the top news stories of the year. As someone who closely follows all of these stories in the political scene, what do you think was the top national story of 2013?
Well, I think one theme that unifies a lot of it is the continued extreme polarization in national politics. You can think of that as lying behind certainly the government shutdown, but also the sequestration, which affected the federal budget a lot this year. Also underlying the conflicts over Obamacare. Mm-hmm. And so in terms of a theme that runs through the year, I think those things do. Then there's some, you know, episodic things like the Boston bombing, for example, which were big and important stories and gripping stories at the time, but pretty rapidly faded away. And then on the more distant world of international politics, the continued war in Syria, though some real progress on chemical weapons there, and the disorder in Egypt after political change that initially looked hopeful but has turned less so. So I think those are things that immediately spring to mind.
Yeah, that makes sense. That polarization is a thread that runs through a lot of this. What story from this year do you expect might have legs next year?
At the moment, it certainly looks like the development of the Affordable Care Act, so-called Obamacare, will persist into the new year. It's still a little too early to have a firm grip on how well enrollments have gone and whether they will speed up as we go into January or whether new difficulties will arise. But as one of the most important policy changes in healthcare, and certainly the most controversial, the most divisive in decades, I would say, that health care reform and the conflicts over it certainly look poised to remain at the centerpiece of the partisan conflict I was talking about. But as an example, but also a bit of a metaphor for the division in the society and in politics going into the coming year.
Let's take a listen to President Obama. We pulled a few notable sound bites from the year for this show. He was got in a lot of trouble for saying if you like your health care plan, you can keep it. And PolitiFact called that the lie of the year. Here he is after he ran into some trouble saying that that his administration will stand by his promise that you can keep your old insurance plan.
If you had one of these substandard plans before the Affordable Care Act became law, And you really liked that plan. You were able to keep it. That's what I said when I was running for office. That was part of the promise we made. But ever since the law was passed, if insurers decided to downgrade or cancel these substandard plans, what we said under the law is you've got to replace them with quality comprehensive coverage. Because that, too, was a central premise of the Affordable Care Act from the very beginning.
So is there going to be more fallout from that, Professor Franklin?
Well, I think it continues. Certainly it's a favorite talking point, a favorite example, and a perfect example of a political leader oversimplifying a very complex issue with an effective rhetorical line at the time, but one that the deeper you dig, the more clear it becomes that that was a very complicated situation, especially if you look at how much those individual health plans tended to change from year to year in the past before Obamacare came in. The idea that they wouldn't turn over at least as rapidly with the Affordable Care Act certainly made it very unlikely that those plans would remain identically available in perpetuity. So in that sense, simplifying it to make a strong political point also misled the country about the complexity of the issue and made it seem like the choices would be much simpler than, in fact, they really were.
Well, we had a listener named Ron who called in, didn't want to go on there apparently, but he wanted to say that the botched Obamacare rollout was the biggest story of this year and the biggest failure of 2013. Can we say it that the Affordable Care Act is a failure, Professor Franklin?
I think it's too soon to tell on the long-term failure. Of course, a lot of people have made up their mind either that it is or isn't years ago. So the reality here, though, is how do individuals who need to buy health insurance react to this over the longer run? I think the technical issues, the website stuff, probably get solved or at least seriously ameliorated and already has much better than it was. But I think the longer-term question is whether people are really pretty happy with what they end up with once they find it. And a still an open question is how do businesses that currently provide employee medical coverage, how do they adjust and change over the coming months? And let's just not look beyond the following year. Because I think those are things that are complicated and unknowable. When Medicare Part D, the drug coverage, came in under the second President Bush, initially there were lots of complaints about how it was implemented, but all the surveys now show seniors are extremely happy with Medicare Part D. So I think there is reason to think historically that as people get used to the plan and the benefits that come from it, support will rise, but the unforeseen complications, the unforeseen issues, I think are still a mystery and will continue to work themselves out through 2014 and through the political campaigns of 2014.
Well, I
can't imagine this being dropped as an issue next fall.
Right. I was going to say that we see in polls, and I'm sure you see in polls since you follow a lot of them, that the support for the president has gone down substantially since the Obamacare problems became dominant in the news. But also, Democrats have been losing ground. And I think one poll we saw last week showed that for the first time, Republicans had a leg up in some of these national polls as when it comes to the 2014 midterms.
Right. And I think you are seeing the effects of all of November and all of December being focused on these difficulties. It's interesting that I don't think we've mentioned the government shutdown, except maybe once. during the shutdown in early October, the story was exactly the opposite. It was about the destruction, the self-destruction of the Republican Party, how this was going to be the dominant issue through 2014. And a lot of Democrats celebrating that, a lot of Republicans very concerned about the fate of the party. And then the shutdown ended and Obamacare came along and our attention changed dramatically in a very short period of time. I think the lesson from that is that the crisis you're in always seems like it's going to be the dominant issue going forward, and we surprisingly rapidly move from one crisis to another. That's why at the beginning I emphasized the divisions and the polarization, because whether you see those divisions reflected in the government shutdown or whether you see them reflected in Obamacare and the very different reactions across Republican and Democratic states in how to accept and use Obamacare, that underlying theme of two camps that have very little willingness to compromise and to work together, I think that is the thing that sets the stage going forward. The specific issues of health care or polarization or government spending, or for that matter, the role of the Tea Party and the Republican Party, all of those reflects the divisions in the country that I think will carry us through 2014.
We are talking about the biggest national political stories of 2013 and previewing some of those issues as we move into 2014. And we're welcoming your input, your nomination. What do you think was the top national political story this year and why? What's your top priority for Congress and President Obama in 2014? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show.
Again, we were misled that there were supposedly protests and then something sprang out of that, an assault sprang out of that. And that was easily ascertained that was not the fact.
But
and the American people could have known that within days, and they didn't know that.
With all due respect, the fact is we had four dead Americans. Was it because of a protest, or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans? What difference at this point does it make? It is our job to figure out what happened and do everything we can to prevent it from ever happening again, Senator.
That was Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson and, at the time, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton back in January 23rd, and a testy exchange over Benghazi. And we are talking about the top political news stories of the year with our guest, Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette University Law School poll and a professor of law and public policy. And welcoming your thoughts on what the top news story of the year was, as far as you're concerned, or one of the top news stories of the year, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So, Professor Franklin, what about the Benghazi story, the controversy? There was, seemed for a time there, it was Benghazi, as well as the IRS scandal at the same time. But now we don't hear so much more about the attack on the Benghazi embassy. In fact, we're hearing that maybe that attack it seems more confusing by the day, that perhaps that was inspired in part by the video. What can you tell us about Benghazi?
Right, Benghazi has been a focal point of Republican criticism of Secretary Clinton specifically, and by implication, President Obama, and has been pushed quite hard. The tape that you just played from committee hearings is a good example of that. Major hearings were held at the end of the spring in late May to look into it. I think the episodic nature of that issue, how it comes and goes, shows that it has some staying power But in terms of clear developments, clear understanding, there haven't been very many new developments. Until just this week, the New York Times ran a substantial piece on what was known about it and who the instigators were, who was the source of it, questioning whether there was any al-Qaeda involvement at all. That story itself, of course, has provoked some controversy and some questions. But I think it highlights the durable nature of the issue and yet how episodic it is and how much the understanding of the events remain murky even after this long a period of time.
Let's take a call from Art in Green Bay. Hello, Art.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning to your guest. I agree. I think that Benghazi is going to be a continuing story, and it's going to be there's an obvious cover up going on here, and you've got too many of the witnesses that have been attempted to be questioned by Republicans that are just hiding out, and they're afraid. Some of them are speaking anonymously and saying their jobs are being threatened, their careers are being threatened. There's a lot going on here that we are not going to be finding out about through the typical sources. It's going to have to come down to a congressional hearing, maybe a grand jury or something of that nature. But it's interesting that the New York Times rolls their story out and contradicts themselves in their own reporting that they did after the event, where they said that there was absolutely al-Qaeda involvement. There was absolutely no indication that any video had anything to do with this. And now they're contradicting themselves, and it's coming out just in time for Hillary Clinton to kick off her campaign. So I really think that we have to take anything that the New York Times says from here on in politically with a grain of salt and look to their natural bias and just disregard what they say, to tell you the truth.
Professor Franklin?
Yeah, I think Art reflects the view of Benghazi as a conspiracy and a cover-up. And, you know, if that is one side of the issue, that we can't get to the bottom of this, the view that we can't get to the bottom of it, that it's a cover-up, that means that where is there a bottom to it? We have had brief congressional hearings that produced little in the way of new revelations or clarity, for that matter. But the issue's not going away, and so I think this will stay with us. But whether it's possible to come to any conclusive result from that satisfies all sides that the truth has been laid on the table, I think that is a great difficulty. Let's also say it doesn't help that Benghazi happened in Benghazi, way away from the usual sources, way away from the usual media and military presence and things that might make it easier to clarify what those events were. So this is an issue that I think will keep arising from time to time. The one thing that we did see during the hearings late last spring was that despite the hearings and a good deal of coverage of them, public opinion about the issue didn't really move very much from the spring until before the hearings to right after. That's a good example of a situation where voters have formed their opinions about it and are little swayed by whatever is said in the hearings or in the news stories.
We have just a minute before news. Well, maybe we better hold this until after news. We'll talk some more about Art said that, you know, Hillary Clinton was getting ready to kick off her presidential campaign. That's not until 2016, the actual election, but certainly there's been a lot of movement already for the 2016 presidential race. And we'll maybe talk a little bit about what we might see in terms of that in 2014 after we check the latest news. We are talking about the top news stories of the year, the top political news stories of 2013 and taking a look at what might be dominating the news in 2014. And we're welcoming your input. What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are talking with Charles Franklin, who is the director of the Marquette University Law School Poll. And we'll welcome your calls after we check the latest news. The botched Obamacare rollout, Edward Snowden's NSA leaks, the IRS and Benghazi controversies, just some of the top national political news stories of the year. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 7:37 on this last day of 2013, Tuesday, December the 31st. We are talking about some of the top political issues of this year and looking ahead to what will likely be in the headlines next year. And welcoming your questions and your votes for that. What do you think was the top political news story of this year and why? What is the top priority that you have for Congress and President Obama in the year to come? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Talking with Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette University Law School Poll. He's also a professor of law and public policy at Marquette University, co-founder of Pollster.com and the founder of PollsandVotes.com. And I said we were going to move into the 2014 election year and the 2016 presidential race, but we have a caller who still wants to talk a little bit about Benghazi. So let's go to Tom in Oshkosh. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Joy. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, I read a lot of mistakes made, lessons learned papers on the U.S. Army War College website, and they're written by officers who served in Iraq. And after listening to the stuff on Benghazi, Benghazi would not make my top 40 list. We went into Iraq, failed to secure 600,000 tons of explosives, and because of that, IEDs were fabricated. We watched them being looted for 400 nights via satellites. And the cost of this war treating will double just treating the wounded warriors from those IEDs. But my question is, when there are huge, significant issues on how the Iraq war, the Middle East is conducted, why would something as insignificant as Benghazi that wouldn't make my top 40 mistakes made, lessons learned paper, why does that get such national legs? And what's wrong with our media that we aren't concentrating on our wounded warriors? Thank you.
All right, Tom. His question changed a little bit over the news, but what about that, Professor Franklin?
No, I think it's an interesting question. I think purely from an economic point of view, or for that matter, lives lost and injuries sustained, the Iraq war is certainly a far vaster affair than the Benghazi incident. But I think the reason that Benghazi remains at the focus is a dramatic case that appears to be a failure of security. Well, it is clearly a failure of security. People were killed and were not effectively protected. Whether that arises from negligence, which is a hot political claim, or whether it arises from the realities on the ground that large military presences are not typically kept around to defend every U.S. Installation or consulate around the world. I think those are complicated questions and raise issues of security of diplomatic personnel. Those are pretty complicated kinds of arguments. So I think the issue with a lot of things is whether a story is dramatic, but it's also a question of is this a case of culpability by elected officials, or is it a case of inevitable circumstances, or not, let me say, unavoidable rather than inevitable circumstances. So I think those are some of the issues. And then finally, if there is a political angle to a story, then there's lots of reasons for the political people involved in it to try to maintain and keep that story alive. So I think all of these are probably unsatisfactory answers to the question, but are the things that underlie when does one of these stories seem to have legs and stick around for a long time versus a point at which it's rapidly forgotten and filed away in lessons learned reports at the War College.
Yeah. Well, at the risk of being the media that keeps pounding away at non-issues, but I'm just kidding. I mean, when we had Congress holding hearing after hearing on Benghazi, the media is going to cover that, right?
Well, certainly. Mm-hmm. I mean, those events are there for a reason. They're there because at least some people think that there's a really serious issue here. Some people think that it's a good political issue. And some people think, as we heard earlier in the show, that there's a serious cover-up going on here that is not being satisfactorily answered or investigated. So
yeah.
I think this just reflects the politically heated issues around the topic, but also help illustrate why it remains a good topic or one that keeps coming up, is because those answers have not reached a point where all sides could look at it and kind of come to a conclusion. Let me use a now old example, but the space shuttle Challenger that exploded on launch, that was a case of a story that was riveting and got tremendous attention. But in the end, we came down to a pretty good technical understanding of why it happened. Low temperatures, the O-ring that failed. So that was a story that could have a beginning, a middle, and an end. For things like Benghazi, it's much harder to ever come up with the equivalent of the O-ring, the clear and consensual understanding of what went wrong. And I think that's true of an awful lot of political debates.
You know, we probably should move on to some other big issues from 2013, including the story of NSA worker, also leaker, Edward Snowden, blowing the whistle off on how much surveillance the National Security Agency was doing. And we have a clip from Edward Snowden, one of his interviews. This is an interview with The Guardian that was released on June 9th, describing how the NSA can spy on Americans.
Any analyst at any time can target anyone, any selector anywhere. Where those communications will be picked up depends on the range of the sensor networks and the authorities that analyst is empowered with. Not all analysts have the ability to target everything, but I, sitting my desk, certainly had the authorities to wiretap anyone, from you or your accountant to a federal judge to even the president if I had a personal email.
Now, there have been some changes recommended to NSA surveillance, but how big a deal is this NSA story going to be in 2014, Professor Franklin? Is there going to be any electoral fallout for the midterms?
I'm not sure about the electoral fallout, but I say that I think this story has turned into a bigger one than I at least initially thought it would be. So we're talking about events that initially took place. The stories broke in June, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And here it is December, but there are active new developments in this story. And I think partly that reflects how much material Snowden got and how much of that has trickled out over time. But let's come back to the domestic politics of this. One of the interesting things is how much libertarians in the Republican Party have been concerned about this. You might expect liberals to be concerned about the right to privacy aspects of this, and plenty of them have been and have complained about the NSA. But it's interesting that on the right, there's now a significant group not willing to just accept anything under the cover of national security, but instead to begin to question this as well from a more libertarian but conservative point of view. That, I think, is a new development in American politics. Senator Rand Paul is, of course, the leading symbol of that change in direction, but a shift that can be coming from conservatives much more critical of the national security apparatus, much more critical of spying on Americans, much more dubious about some of our international commitments as well. So I think if we're looking ahead, how that plays out in the long run, narrowly about the NSA and what its authority is and how it does things, but I think much more broadly, the potential for a developing skepticism of national security from the right joining the skepticism from the left. And that could bring about some interesting shifts and alignments in Congress and in future administrations, as well as among the American people in how we view what we do in the name of national security.
We are reviewing the biggest national political stories of 2013 and taking a look at what issues may be top issues of 2014. And we're welcoming your questions. We're welcoming your thoughts on this. What do you think was the most important political news story of this year and why? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Charles Franklin, a professor of law and public policy at Marquette University, director of the Marquette University Law School poll. We are talking about the most significant, the biggest national political stories of the year and looking ahead to what stories, what issues might be dominant in 2014. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. One other issue I wanted to talk about, Professor Franklin, we just had the one-year anniversary of the horrible shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School. A package of legislation designed to, gun control like legislation did not make it through Congress, even though President Obama spent a good part of the year pushing for it. Why did this fail?
You know, I think this is one of the one of the surprises of the year, that coming off of Sandy Hook, when initially there seemed to be a lot of belief that gun control legislation would pass or could pass, that it really didn't. And in fact, as we saw in Colorado recently, where the state passed gun control changes, and Colorado, of course, has been the site of several shootings over the last few years, that resulted in recall actions against three state senators, two of whom were defeated and one of whom resigned. I think that it shows that this is an issue where support for guns, opposition to gun control, remains a very powerful feature of the calculations that elected officials make, that legislators make, and is a good example of a very intense group of people very concerned about the issue in opposition to it, backed by the National Rifle Association and other strong gun rights advocacy groups. Finally, I think, in this particular case, There's also a question that of how effective would those changes have been. If you're only banning the most obscure, the most narrowly used weapons, is that really going to be effective? Or something the gun rights groups point out, it's not hard to get a gun if you want one, and so these measures are going to be ineffective. There's a real debate about whether those claims on all sides are really factual, but I think the question of the doubt about this being an issue that gun control would really affect was also a part of the failure of the issue. Finally, I suppose we might just recognize that these kinds of school shootings, of which Sandy Hook was a horrific, extreme example, are things that we've been living with for a long time now. And as shocking as the event itself is, the ability of a single event to lead to change in public policy, I think, is very limited. If it weren't limited, why didn't we see a big change after Columbine those years ago, for example, or in the theater shooting in Colorado? So, you know, I think this is one where events really grab our attention when they happen, but have a long history of 20-plus years of failing to result in any kind of legislative change.
Another issue, the immigration reform, seemed to be on the front burner for part of the year. The Senate passed a comprehensive immigration reform bill, but it stalled in the House, which wanted a step-by-step approach. How might immigration reform look in 2014? Is this finally going to happen or not?
I would be surprised at this point in 2014 because it really does rest on the House taking action, and that just doesn't seem to be in the cards. I suppose some of the small issues might be agreed on. There are some where both sides seem to agree, but aren't willing to agree to divide up the issue as opposed to a large comprehensive approach to the issue. In the beginning of 2013, it did look like momentum was there, and it also looked like there was a bit of a breakthrough in bipartisan cooperation in the Senate, where the immigration bill had support from Marco Rubio, most prominently on the Republican side. But Rubio, in the end, has backed away from his support for the issue as a result of opposition within his party. And you see that then reflected in the House and its unwillingness to act. So back to where we started the show, the division and polarization within the Congress and to some extent within the public makes these issues very vexing, very difficult to move ahead on.
Well, we almost ended the year. It was just a short time ago with the bipartisan federal budget deal. Is that hopeful for the year to come, that perhaps there will be a little bit more working together?
Well, you can always hope. Mm-hmm. And you know, sometimes political change comes suddenly and surprisingly to almost everybody, so never say never. But I think that budget compromise did come in the wake of the relatively disastrous shutdown of the federal government. We may see more as we reach the debt ceiling limit in the spring, in the winter or spring, to again see whether the appetite for further log jams over fiscal issues is gone. But going into the political year of 2014, there are a lot of Republican primaries where Tea Party groups are challenging established Republican senators. Democrats are in serious danger of losing control of the U.S. Senate. I think those issues make it far less likely that we see bipartisanship suddenly burst out or singing on the floor of the House.
Well, I'm going to take one last call. We have very little time, but Carolyn and Madison, what did you think was the story of the year?
Well, there's so many stories.
I know, but which one did you call in about?
Well, I'm calling in because I think a lot of these stories are designed almost, or it seems to me that the 1% is getting away with so much that I think there's a lot of distraction going on, and these stories represent a lot of distraction from things like the TPP, Pacific trade thing, a corporate personhood. That's I understand there's a bunch of court cases that are trying to expand First Amendment rights for.
I'm sorry, Carolyn. We're going to get it. We have only a minute left, Professor Franklin. I thought she wanted to know about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and that it, is that, that that's going to be on the table. Is it not in 2014?
I'm not that familiar with those issues, so I'll pass on that. But I thought she actually raised an interesting point, and that is one that we're likely to see more of, and her use of the phrase the 1%. This question of inequality, income inequality in the country, and how do we deal with that as a policy issue that favors established interests over a broader public? I think that is an issue that we're likely to see coming up in a tax reform debate here in the state or in the federal government as well. So I think on those things, these are issues that will be with us through the year.
And I'm looking forward to talking to you about many of these issues in the year to come. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette University Law School Poll. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing the program. This is the Ideas Network.